Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Digitally Uploaded podcast, the companion podcast to digitallydownloaded.net. I'm Matt Sainsbury, the editor-in-chief of Digitally Downloaded, and with me this week we have Alan, who's back from wherever the hell he was.
Hello, I'm not actually dead, contrary to popular belief. It's nice. It's nice to feel the touch of the living again.
And we have a new person on this week as well, James, who's been around in the Aussie games journalism space for a bit and knows his stuff. So hello, James.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you on.
It's interesting to be talking about games at this time of the morning. I'm not used to it, but it's a nice change.
The only podcast recorded before 12 p.m. Yeah, it's amazing.
Was our customary Hatsune Miku track to start things off. That one is LOL, which means lots of laugh in the Miku world, and is a really catchy song. You can play that one on Future Tone or Miku X. Okay, so it's the first week of February, and we should probably talk about the games that are coming out in February, because once again, like January was a bit of a crazy month, so is February. We have... going through the list that I've got here, we've got Poochie and Yoshi's Woolly World, which is the port of Yoshi's Woolly World from the Wii U. We've got Neo, which is Koei Tecmo's Dark Souls-ish game. We've
Reviews
For Honor. Yes, reviews have come out for that already. Unfortunately, I haven't had a chance to play it yet because Sony is handling distribution here and hasn't sent out a review copy to me yet. But hopefully I'll get onto it as soon as possible because I played the demo at TGS. It looked really good. What else we got? Just quickly, we've got For Honor. We've got Sniper Elite. We have Berserk and the Band of the Hawk for Warriors fans. We've got YS Origin. We have Horizon Zero Dawn, which I guess some people are probably looking forward to. We have a new Harvest Moon game, or what is now Harvest Moon Story of Seasons. And we have Torment, Tides of Numenera. Numenera, I can't pronounce that. Anyway.
Look, you got there eventually, so it's fine. Just pretend that you knew the entire time.
And I must admit, that's probably the one I'm looking forward to the most. That's kind of the spiritual sequel to Planescape Torment, which is, yeah, it's,
okay.
If you haven't played it before, it's an old RPG. Yeah. It's an old RPG that's regarded by a lot of people as one of the best of all time. So
it's certainly one of the best written of all time, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good quality one. And hopefully this sequel lives up to it. It's coming out on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, so you'll be able to play it on your consoles as well. And yeah, I'm really keen on that one. Fingers crossed for it. So, James, what from that list are you kind of looking forward to?
Oh, geez. From the list that you mentioned or the list that I'm looking at of February releases?
Well, if there's anything that I mentioned, yeah.
So you did mention Horizon Zero Dawn in your classic sarcastic tone, and I am actually looking forward to that game. Funnily enough, I did get to play a bunch of it at the EB Expo last year, and that was enough to convince me, at least how tight it felt at the controller, that I wanted to see what that was all about and kind of its grander scope. I'm also, now that you mentioned Planescape, I'm now also interested in Tides of Numenera, because I don't often play games of that size or of that style anymore. It's been quite a number of years since I've enjoyed sort of that kind of deep RPG, and I'd be totally down for doing something like that. Although I am playing Persona 4 at the moment as well, so I don't know. I suppose that's a reasonably deep RPG.
Just a little.
Yes. I'm gonna veto Persona 4 discussion for a moment because
not to bring that up.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of really, really interesting games coming out this time of year, which I didn't expect to come out this time of year. I guess like Neo looks really, really cool, and from what I've seen of For Honor, it looks like it will be the least Ubisoft game to come out of Ubisoft in a while, which is really, really exciting because it means they're actually doing something with their time that's new, which is nice, even though it looks like a ripoff of Mountain Blade with, like, I'm not going to say ripoff. I feel bad for saying ripoff. Iteration on Mountain Blade. You know, it might be all right. I've not played it. I don't really feel the need to play it, to be quite honest with you. And I know that you're excited for Horizon Zero Dawn, but that game, I'm put off by everything and by that title. It's so bad. It's one of the worst. It tells me nothing.
We need to petition the end of colonized titles.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, I wish. I'm so sick of it. It's like every single time there's a colon title and then there's another colon in it, it just drives me mental. It's like, just have a title that works,
yeah,
please.
Settle on something. You jerks.
Pick something, you jerks. How dare you write a title that I don't like?
Have you get a chance to play the Neo beta at all?
Anyone? I played the demo, but not the beta.
The demo, yeah, that's kind of what I was talking about. They had a limited demo that came out over a weekend. Like, what was that? A week ago or so? Towards the end.
Oh, there was a new one. Wow. Okay. Well, I missed out on that entirely. Yeah. Tell me about.
Sorry,
it.
Sorry. For the last couple of months, every month or so, or 2 months, they've done one of those weekend demos, and there's been three of them from recollection. And I think Alan's played a different one to me. The one I played one at TGS, which I think was a demo build, and it was really cool. It was you went into like this Japanese style castle, which isn't surprising given the game's based in Japan. But you went into this Japanese style castle, and there was like a witch woman shooting icicles at you, and it was brutal because you can even get close to her before she basically wiped the floor with you. Anyway, that was really cool. That's the one I played. Alan's played a different one. But yeah, I try not to play too many of these demos because I kind of want to sit down and experience the whole game when it comes out.
Sure.
I know they're pretty useful for people to get interested in the games, but yeah, I try and avoid them.
I've played the Nier Automata demo about 4 times now, so it's fine. Things okay.
Yeah, that's okay. A good demo.
It is a really good.
Speaking of demos, I've also jumped on the beta for Honor. And had a whirl with that. I have deep issues with For Honor. The game plays really well. I will say that.
The fact that it's spelt wrong and should be fixed. Because
yes,
honestly,
if you're going to release a game, yeah, if you're going to release a game in English, in Australian English anyway, there's a U in Honor, Ubisoft.
I believe it's pronounced the Queen.
English, you would get that.
It's funny. I just wanted to ask. You say you don't have a problem with the gameplay, so it feels all right at least to play, because I think that's kind of important for a game that's going to rely on, you know, that kind of tactical combat that it's implying in at least its sort of pre-release stuff.
Yeah, no, it plays really well. So to give you an idea of what's kind of involved, it's more like a MOBA than Mountain Blade.
Right.
Like the main gameplay mode has those kind of peons spawning, and they kind of converge into the middle of the map and battle with the peons of the other side. And if you help your peons by killing the enemy's peons, the battle line kind of moves closer towards the enemy's base, which gets you points and stuff. The combat itself is quite tactical. There's kind of 3 different positions you can attack. So you can attack from above or on the left and on the right, and you can also defend above, left, and right. So when you run into an enemy, the goal is to kind of guess where the enemy's going to attack you, and you do get some tells to kind of help, and then you need to kind of respond and break through the enemy's defenses and stuff. It's quite a tactical combat system. I quite like the way that it's been built, and I think that's a good thing. My problem with it is that it's done a really shitty job of 3 very different warrior cultures and representing them in the game. They all play exactly the same. So if you're a Viking, you play exactly the same as if you're a samurai, which is exactly the same as a European knight. Now, when For Honor was first announced, I was really excited for it because it kind of seemed like it was going to be that kind of fantasy wish fulfillment, you know, if a knight and a samurai meet in battle, who's going to win and all that kind of stuff. And I thought that Ubisoft would do a little bit more of an effort in kind of reflecting the different ways that these cultures fought their battles. But as a result, you might as well all be knights or whatever. So that was really disappointing. They're not going to fix that by the time the game comes out, obviously.
Yeah, that's not a fixable thing. That's not like a bug.
That's a pure balancing thing. And that, I mean, you know, it's probably early to suspect something like this, but it sounds to me like they were having trouble. If they did try that, they were having trouble balancing it. And that's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, completely agree with you. I reckon that the game's been built for esports.
You can see immediately it's got the heart of an esport game that I don't think will take off. I really hope they don't take off.
Because it is built for esports, they went, you know, as far as possible to make sure that there's no kind of meta game advantage to taking, you know, one of the 3 sides. So yeah, wasted opportunity there.
They could have rock, paper, scissored this, you know?
Mm.
And it's a shame that they chose. Well, I mean, obviously the game's not out yet, but yeah, it's a shame that they didn't seem to choose that route.
Well, the other thing is, it doesn't actually matter what kind of side you take, because when it gets into battle, you can be fighting. You know, if you're a samurai, you can end up matched up with a Viking or a European knight. So, you know, what's the point of picking a faction where the factions just kind of, you know, meld together and stuff? So, yeah, on a thematic basis, For Honor is probably not going to go down so well with me. But, you know, for people who only care about the gameplay, that's probably one to look forward to.
I can hear Matt's just derision at my taste in games right now. Go tell.
roadie. Go tell Ed Roadie. Go tell Ed Roadie that everybody's dead. I was raised in a deep, dark hole, a prisoner with no parole. They locked me up and took my soul.
Welcome back. That was a track from Resident Evil 7, which should give you an idea of what we're probably going to talk about in this section. We're looking at the horror genre, given that Resident Evil 7 came out a week ago, and we've been playing that a bit, and there's been quite a few other horror games of less quality that have also been released in recent weeks. So it's a little bit on top of mind for us at the moment. And surprise, surprise, Alan and I kind of disagree on Resident Evil 7.
It was going to happen no matter what. Even if I said it was terrible, you would have loved it. It would have gone like a different route, like either way.
Yeah, but Alan kind of really likes it. I have my issues with it. and to briefly go through those, I think it's a really well-made game, as I said in my review. I think it's a masterfully well-made game. It's gorgeous. It's one of the best VR uses of VR in a game that we've seen as well. But for me, it really failed to be the kind of horror game I'm looking for. I'm trying to find words to describe it quickly.
Can I ask what kind of horror game you're looking for?
Yes. So I like horror games that are not derivative for a start. Or if they are,
I mean, it's number seven in the series.
Well, the thing is, okay, so Resident Evil 7 doesn't feel like any other Resident Evil game for a start. So this one does feel like an attempt to reinvent the series, where the first couple of Resident Evil games were that kind of campy B-grade kind of horror experience, which was playing right into the 80s and 70s and 80s kind of schlock horror stuff. And that kind of horror I really like because it's fun and stupid and you kind of just enjoy it. Then the series kind of went into this action mode with 4, 5, and 6 and some of the other side releases in there, and I didn't really like any of those. I don't know, that's blasphemy.
Hold on, we're just gonna have a quick moment of pause here. You don't like 4?
Well,
the greatest game ever made. You don't like 4?
I like 4, but not as a horror game. I don't think it's a horror game. I think it's an action game. And you know, that for me, I lost a lot of interest in Resident Evil, especially come 5 and 6, because they were not not what I'm looking for in a game at all. Seven is this attempt to go back and be a genuine horror game for the first time for the Resident Evil series for me. It was very sincere in its attempts to frighten players. And it took an awful lot of conventions from the horror genre and threw them all at the player, one after the other. And for me, the biggest problem with the Resident Evil 7 was that it was all very derivative. Like, if you're a fan of horror, you've seen everything that was in that game to the point where you're kind of sick of it. So that's my issue with Resident Evil. And yeah.
Would you call yourself a, I suppose, a bit of an expert in horror, in the horror genre? Have you played a lot of horror games?
Yeah, I make a point of playing almost all of them. And I've seen, you know, dozens and dozens, hundreds of horror films. I studied horror at university.
Really? That's awesome. Sorry, yes. I don't mean to be going slightly off topic, but that's really cool.
Yeah.
I find that fascinating. No,
it was really good fun. I had a great time doing it.
I really struggle with horror personally, as much as I'm absolutely fascinated by horror games. Like the last one that I tried to play, and you might even disagree that this is a horror game, but last one that I tried to play was Alien Isolation, and
no, that's a horror game.
I could only play that for 15 minutes at a time, and it scared the absolute bejesus out of me, and I got like an hour into it before I just had to put the controller down and was like, no, I can't do it. I'm an anxious mess just even thinking about it.
Well, it's funny you mentioned Alien Isolation, because I actually think that's the kind of horror game that I like to play.
It's a really good game as well.
Yeah, it's an excellent game. It's fucking terrifying.
For me, the thing that I liked about it was it did a lot of disempowering of the player. For me, one of the things that's really important in horror is that the audience, whether you're playing or watching, in the case of movies, is that you feel disempowered, and you feel like there's that kind of atmosphere that, you know, everything out there is going to get you, or there's just no way you can possibly get out of this situation, and so on and so forth, and you don't have the tools to do it yourself. With Resident Evil 7, you've got weapons and stuff, and that means that you feel empowered to then take the fight to the enemy, which isn't horror to me. And that kind of clashes with the atmosphere that Resident Evil 7 was trying to create through its shock scares and its settings and so on. So, yeah, that's I guess, why I think Alien Isolation is a better horror game than Resident Evil 7.
This is why we shouldn't be allowed in the same room, because I'm just going to completely contradict everything you've just said. I think it's really good. I think it does have the goofy nonsense from earlier Resident Evil games. I think there's absolutely all the charm from those games in this one particularly. I don't know if you guys have all seen this, but there's a scene where Jack gets in a car, and it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, it's got some of the like coolest ideas and best implementation of ideas I've seen in a long while. And I know that, you know, the whole, you know, psycho American Bayou thing has been done before, because obviously it's a pretty, you know, it's pretty easy to get spooked by a Bayou, at least in my opinion. Not a fan of the whole gator thing. That's not cool. I don't like that. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's done a really, really good job. And I know that Matt sort of just said, you know, that it's too much empowerment, but I feel like it's just the right amount of empowerment, because in the old RE games, you would get that sort of power by the end of it, and it was still, like, frightening. Like, I was still afraid of Nemesis in 3. Like, it was, you know, a sort of situation where you do have the tools to deal with it, but, you know, you might not have the tools later on, so do you want to waste them now? Getting rid of a small, like, issue, and then, you know, suffer later down the line. And I feel like the inclusion of the stalking characters, so, you know, like Jack, like Marguerite, like Lucas, you know, they make it even more threatening to be wasting ammo on them or wasting any sort of supply on them, just because you don't know if they will come back. And, you know, they don't really die. And even if you do think they're dying, they're not dying. They're just going to come and bite your ankles later on. It's fine. I think it's really good. I really, really enjoy it. I mean, it's one of the things that I expected from RE7 from the get-go, was to have this sort of more traditional Resident Evil experience, but with, I guess, modern sensibilities. And although I haven't played the VR, I've heard that that is incredible, and I do not want to play it in VR whatsoever, which is a good sign that it's good.
Well, VR kind of raises a different issue. it is really well done. So it looks great through VR and it's very atmospheric. But I guess the issue with the VR in that case is Resident Evil 7 is quite a physical game. And by that, I mean, there's obviously a lot of damage done to the character.
Yeah. Really? It's almost like he's horribly mutilated immediately.
Yeah. He cops quite a lot. And when you've got the VR goggles on, the sense of immersion is such that you do feel like you're kind of placed in the world, which means when violence is done to you and you don't feel it in the real world, there is that disconnect. There is a very severe disconnect between what you're seeing and what you feel like you should be experiencing. And that
I'm okay is with that, though. I don't want to be feeling those things.
Well, I don't either. Don't want to be feeling. But to me, it doesn't really work as an as an immersion technique. For me, there's a horror game on the PlayStation VR, which is more effective. What's it called? Here They Lie. Here They Lie, which is much more a storytelling kind of game. There's less immediate kind of physical danger to the player, and it's more about kind of moving through the world and, you know, witnessing what's going on. And that is a better use of VR as far as I'm concerned, because that is more playing to the VR's strengths, where you don't have to physically interact anymore. So it shows kind of, it's a really well done VR game, but it also shows the weakness of VR that needs, the developers need to consider going forwards, I think.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
If I can, I just want to quickly raise up a horror game that I reviewed probably a year and a half ago. It came out sort of towards the end of 2015. It's called Masochesia by a developer by the name of Old Blood. It's probably more of a psychological horror than anything else. And I don't know, whenever I think of it, it's kind of one of those things I immediately just think, wow, this game is kind of fucked. Because goddamn, that the way that it's, you play like a child, you play like a kid who is fucked in the head and has this really messed up family. I don't want to go into it too much because it's only a short game. It's only probably about 2 hours long, 2.5 hours long. But that story impacted me in a way that I couldn't stop thinking about it.
Silent Hill 2 levels of terror.
It was just really heavily affecting story. It kind of deals with like depression in a very serious way. It's something that I think people should play. It's not very expensive on Steam, and it's definitely something that people, especially fans of the horror genre, should look at, I think.
Yeah, and just very quickly to pipe in with my own, I guess, recommendation for horror. I'm a huge fan of the Fatal Frame or Project Zero series, depending on what country you're in. I find those ones to be magnificently terrifying in the way that they're presented. And the core mechanic about those games is that you don't have a weapon to fight off the ghost, but what you do have is a camera which takes photos of the ghosts, and that kind of defeats them by dissipating their essence or something rather. What's so terrifying about it is that to do maximum damage to the ghost, you actually have to let it get closer to you. The closer it is, the more damage you'll do when you take the photo of it. So there's that really, the game is so effective because it forces you to suppress that kind of fight or flight, or the flight mechanism, which is the general response that you have to kind of horrific visuals. So yeah, that's a really clever horror game series as far as I'm concerned.
Nice.
welcome back. That was a track from Metal Gear Rising. The reason we played that is for the third section of the podcast this week. We're going to talk about frame rates. The catalyst, I guess, for talking about this is that Neo, which is coming out next week, we mentioned that briefly at the start of the podcast, actually has the option for players to choose between 30 or 60 frames per second. And that's a pretty good deal, I think, for people who are willing to make whatever trade-offs need to be made in order to have a faster frame rate.
Should be everyone. Everyone should be willing to make that trade-off.
Some people care a lot about frame rates, Alan.
Yes, hello.
I must admit,
hi.
I don't. I'm more interested in other bits and pieces about a game, and as long as it's not... I honestly cannot really tell the difference between 30 frames per second and 60 frames per second, whatever you need to be able to process in the head to see those.
I'm just gently fuming just in the corner here. It's fine.
So, I can see if they drop below 30, I can kind of, because I see the stuttering effect if they drop below 30, but for me, the difference isn't that important. I'm more interested in the game having nice art and great storytelling. But yes, I do know that other people care a great deal about these things for reasons.
Well, where to begin with this sort of thing, though? So, I like competitive games. I don't know if that's been made very clear, but I'm very much into the whole online shooty bang scene. And basically, if a game does not run at 60, I will not play it most of the time. So when I was pretty young, I used to play a lot of TF2, and I had a... I didn't really own the laptop. It was my family's laptop that wasn't really meant for gaming at all. So it didn't run things very well. It was very, very bad. And I would be sort of playing TF2 on a 800 by 600 resolution and lowest settings possible, hoping to God that I could even get remotely close to 30 FPS. And ever since then, I've sort of made it my goal to never play anything on an 800 by 600 resolution with 30 FPS ever again, because it is not fun. And see, the thing is, I'm always happy to have, a downgrade in visual fidelity. I'm happy to not have, individual grass follicles, because who cares? And I'd rather have, tangible impact on the game through just making sure it runs at the best possible way, and I think Platinum does this really well, because all their games do generally tend to run solid 60 most of the time, unless I've not seen anything happen like that in Korra, but I could be wrong, and I don't want to play the Turtles game because obvious reasons. But yeah, I feel like there's absolutely no reason why a game should not be 60 FPS. There is a very tangible difference, a very, very tangible difference. It does actually impact everything about the gameplay pretty substantially. And I think what Neo's doing is pretty good in that it caters to the people who don't understand frame rates and don't understand why it's such a beneficial thing to have a 60 FPS experience, but still want the sort of high graphical fidelity of, the latest technology. I feel like there's no excuse anymore to not have 60 when there's, computers you can buy now that are pretty cheap that you can get 60 FPS experiences on, high-end games. So I feel, I just want more. I want more 60 FPS. There's no reason. I'm happy to have a game look slightly worse. It's okay. I just want that cleanness.
So when you say there's no reason, I'll counter that with there is absolutely a reason. And that one, that is called stylistic reasons. So, I mean, it's not important for, it's not important for every game to be 60, but it is important for some games to be 60 or higher.
Majority of games. I will argue South Park was one of the best things to use, sub 30 FPS, because it doesn't need it.
So that's the thing. I think sub 30 FPS is totally unacceptable. Everything should at very least be locked to 30, because yes, that's at least you know, most panels are 60 hertz at least these days. Most common ones anyway. You obviously find the 144 hertz ones, but, you know, they're still quite expensive. So, I mean, for me personally, if I'm playing a good single player game, I don't mind if it sits at 30. If I'm playing something like Dark Souls, that requires like timing, then I want it to sit at 60. And if I'm, because something I do a lot, and I'm not going to get into this bunch because I'll just keep talking about it, but I do a lot of sim racing, and that is all about good frame rates. Because if you don't have a good frame rate, that not only impacts things like basic things like your turn in and like how the, you know, visually everything responds to your inputs. And that just in turn breaks everything that you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, but I think there's, you know, there's good arguments for both. And I think the most important thing is that developers make the right decision for their game, you know. That's kind of what it comes down to for me. Like, there's no point in making a competitive multiplayer game that is going to sit at 30 FPS because it just doesn't work.
That would be the ballsiest move I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. And I hope someone does it so I can tear them to shreds.
You know, it just doesn't work. Whereas, you know, you can get away with it in something that's more detailed, like a Last of Us or, you know, something like that. So, I think there's an argument to be made for both. That's my sitting on the fence.
We need someone to do that because I know that Matt's about to say that.
Well, I guess that's the thing. Obviously competitive games need to have 60 frames per second because otherwise they're not competitive anymore. Or they start to inhibit the competition. So I'm a fan of some fighting games, Dead or Alive and whatever. If they're not running a good frame rate, obviously I'm going to notice that. Or when I was playing Overwatch, you know, if that's not running at a good frame rate, you definitely
kind of
suffer. But, if I'm playing, if I'm playing Persona 4, who gives a toss about the frame rate? It's kind of not important. Not important. It doesn't change anything. You know, if it was running at, you know, below 30 frames per second, it doesn't. But if it was running at that kind of point, how the game plays. And it doesn't cost you anything because it's a turn-based RPG. So I guess that's kind of the thing. I don't think about frame rates because I just assume that a good game, a good example, or a well-developed game is going to have the right frame rate for its, you know, target audience and the way it's meant to be played. I didn't care what the frame rate was for Overwatch because it was always going to be 60 frames per second.
I'm trying to be 120.
I don't know what Final Fantasy 15 runs at. If it runs at 30, then it doesn't.
It runs at 30, but then actually upgraded at 60 for the PS4 Pro, which is very, very good. And I like that a lot. I think that's good. I think that's amazing. I would very much like that. I want that option to be in every game because I know that people necessarily don't care. I think that's fine.
I don't think 60 FPS can save that game.
Here we go. And that's how we never had another guest on the podcast.
Hey man, you didn't ask me here to be nice.
Final Fantasy 15 is great. End of story.
James has never invited back.
Like
on,
I said, you know, when you're looking through, if I was to create a list of features for various games, I'd never actually put frame rate as a feature because if it's a good game, it's going to have the right frame rate and it's not a feature. It's just an expected part of the development cycle. I've seen on forums and things, people complain about the frame rate of visual novels and who the hell cares? You know, it's text. You press a button, it scrolls to the next thing of text. A frame
crazy,
rate
that scroll not perfect. Crazy
people care about that kind of thing.
The scroll's not perfect, though. That does really annoy me.
You don't play visual novels, Alan.
I played one because of the last time you told me to do that. And I was like, this is not fun. I'm going to stop. Reinforcing the fact that Matt and I cannot agree on anything, even when I try to be agreeable.
you know, another example is, yeah, I'm playing Dragon Quest VIII on the 3DS at the moment, and I know that can't possibly be at 60 frames per second. I also don't care because I'm more interested in, you know, the gorgeous art, the, you know, the cartoon art and the narrative and the characters and the fact it's a classic game.
I wonder if the 3DS panels can even handle 60 hertz.
They can.
They can.
Can they?
They can.
Wow. Yeah. Street Fighter 4 was in 60 FPS.
Crazy.
Yep. As should every game. We really keep repeating that and just like hoping that someone eventually agrees with me so I can stop talking about it.
But yeah, I mean, competitive scene.
I can see why it's... Sorry, please, go on.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say again that, you know, the competitive scene, it makes perfect sense that they want 60 frames per second in the games that they're playing. But, you know, last competitive game I played was like one match of Smite when it was new on the PlayStation. New on the PlayStation 4, I gave it like a go or two or something, and that was
basically... And you immediately put it down, yeah. Don't blame you.
I mean, you know, I stopped playing Overwatch when Overwatch got competitive, and, you know, that's not my scene. It's just not my scene. So, yeah. Although I do get you with the racing games, I must actually. You know, I don't know what Project Cars was set at. I assume 60.
That was 60. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The I really new Dirt game as well. I believe Dirt Rally is a 60 as well, and it's gorgeous. Yep. It is such a good-looking game, and it just runs perfectly, and it makes me so happy, and Codemasters should make every game in the world. I don't care. They should make everything. I want them to get all the money. I love them so much.
Codies have been doing a really good job the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, did you play Grid Autosport?
Yes. Yes, I did, but that didn't impress me all that much because I'm definitely more of a sim kind of guy more than the arcade style. So I was definitely more of a fan of the original Grid and in some aspects Grid 2 as well. So Autosport didn't do all that much, but I was very excited by the random stuff that they did, the procedural track generation. I thought
that's awesome.
Cool. Anyway, not to go completely off topic.
Well, it was in 60 FPS, so it's fine.
It was.